student comes to campus in the week or so, week and a half, what happens to them relative to the discussion about civics literacy at Purdue?
So the students will get information from their BGR leaders, encouraging them to participate in a voluntary survey. And this survey is really designed to assess their understanding of kind of basic political knowledge, people, processes, laws, and policies. They'll also get a message from President Daniels during the new student induction ceremony, also encouraging them to complete this survey. And this is really not so much a test or an exam. We're really not concerned with whether they answer the questions correctly. More so, we're really interested in getting a baseline measure of where students are at with their knowledge on politics, civics, and those topics, in order to then help to guide us into more informed discussions around what we might do as a campus to address a potential gap or build on the strengths of the students that may exist.
You used an interesting word there, a potential gap. There seems to still be some disagreement about where Purdue students might stand relative to their peers. I have been the same meetings you've been at in some cases where there are people who say, how do we know this is a problem at Purdue? Aren't we assuming that it's the same problem that President Daniels says he sees in plenty of different places? Have we gotten past that part of the discussion yet, do you think?
I'm hoping that the survey and the results will actually address that issue head on. So we'll have a better understanding of what our students know, what they don't know, what gaps might exist, whether they exist, and how we might address them. So I think that this is really, in some ways, kind of stage one of what might be a longer process in terms of addressing the proposal put forward by President Daniels. My hope is that with a better understanding of where our students at when they come, you know, straight into the doors. We're not conflating this with, oh, well, this student took, you know, political science, or the student's this kind of major. We're getting them straight in the door, and we'll be able to better determine where they are and what they might need and what they're doing really well at and what we can build on.
So where are we right now in terms of putting this assessment together? Do you know yet precisely what students are going to be asked?
So we have some ideas that are in the works. We have a request out to folks at the Woodrow Wilson Foundation, which is the nonprofit organization that put together the survey that went out that really, I think, got this issue on the map on a national scale, that found that, you know, X percentage of Americans, you know, can't identify, you know, how long a senator serves a term for. And so we're hoping to kind of get that those survey items so that we can then distribute those to the students and maybe do some really interesting comparisons relative to that particular assessment. And we're also pulling from the what's known as the gold standard for assessing civics literacy and knowledge within the field of political science. Professor Jay McCann has expertise in this area and has been really instrumental in terms of kind of helping us to shape this. I'll also mention Professor Phil Van Fossen in education, who has expertise in this area and is helping us to solicit those questions from the Woodrow Wilson Foundation. So hopefully it'll be a kind of a combination of those two assessments, and that'll allow us to kind of get a sense of maybe going forward what might be important questions to ask of students. And I think it's really important that whatever is on this survey, we really wanted to make sure that it was reliable and valid items so that we're getting the best data we can.
Do you have any sense of whether it'll be open answer or multiple choice or how that's going to work? Because obviously that question of how long does a senator serve, you could set it up a couple of different ways. Is it more useful to you if it's one way versus the other?
I'm not quite sure of the specific details on that. I believe some of the items are open answer. So that would be, you know, fill in the blanks. I think some of them might be multiple choice, but we want to avoid a situation where we're doing sort of open-ended essay questions. So essentially, this will be about 20 items, 20 to 25 items on the survey. Students should be able to complete it within 5 to 10 minutes, so it won't be too onerous of a task. And we're really emphasizing to the students that there's really no right or wrong answers in the sense of, I mean, clearly there's a right answer to that question, but there's no right or wrong answer in the sense of that they're going to get a grade at the end of the survey that's going to determine something meaningful for them. We really want to know what they know. And so we're encouraging students, you know, take it on your own, you know, don't ask Siri or Alexa or, you know, Google Answers. Just guess. What do you think the answer is? And so if you think that that answer to that question is 5, put in 5. If you think it's 100, put in 100. It really doesn't matter. We just want to get a sense of where the students are at. And if we get that that real assessment, right, of what students know, that's going to be the best data for us in terms of going forward, because we don't want to stack the deck one way or the other. And then whatever we do going forward isn't really helpful or useful then.
So you've mentioned that this is voluntary. Students don't have to do it. You also brought up an interesting point about do it by yourself. Don't use some sort of outside resource. But you really can't control any of those things. So how does the data that's generated by this have any scientific validity if it's not done in a controlled environment, I have to ask?
That's a great question. And I think the goal isn't so much to get at a sort of true sense of what's out there and that kind of scientific validity, again, but getting at what students know. And my hope is, and again, we can't control it. You're right. I mean, I think that's a great point. But my hope is that with the encouragement of the university president, President Daniels, with the encouragement of the BGR staff, that it's just emphasizing this is really low stakes. There's zero stakes. This is a confidential survey. We're not going to be, you know, student X got this many wrong. We're not presenting that kind of data. And so there's really no reason to, you know, Google Answers or ask Siri or copy off of a friend. And so my hope then, and maybe this is the naivete in me, but my hope is that the students will just complete the survey upholding the, you know, kind of Purdue honor code that we have in terms of the integrity and expectations of students, both inside and outside of the classroom.
Do you worry at all about the fact that because it is voluntary, that you might get more responses from people who know that they know the answers and that skews the responses you get?
That's certainly an issue. And I think hopefully we might be able to address that in other ways. I think going forward, that's going to be something that a question that the experts who are at the table, who are synthesizing some of that data and those results, are going to have to take into consideration. Certainly self-selection and bias are issues in any survey that you administer. And so my hope is that there's kind of ways that we can work around that.
So you've got 7,000 incoming freshmen, give or take.
It's 8,300 around there. Yeah.
So how many do you need to complete this voluntary assessment for the numbers to be significant, for you to say, all right, we've learned something about this cohort of students?
So this is where my limited knowledge of statistics is going to be exposed. I know there's really complex ways that those who are in this field would be able to calculate. And it's called, you know, I think it's power analysis or something along those lines, right, in terms of how many do we need to get to make certain assessments. So I have to defer to my experts on that regard. We're fairly confident based on the response rate of other surveys that are administered during BGR that we should have a fairly decent response rate. We're expecting anywhere upwards of 5,000. I'm sure we probably don't even need that much.
Do you think more than half of kids are going to take this?
We believe so, yes. Incoming freshmen are, we're capturing them at a time where they're coming to campus. There's not a whole lot that's going on right now with respect to classes. And I think the fact that this is something that's important to the university, important to the president, will make it an important priority for our incoming freshmen as well.
Do you know if the leaders of the BGR groups are going to be asked to find 5 or 10 minutes where the students can sit down in a quiet environment and do this? And so this becomes a, this is what we're doing for this next quarter hour thing?
We had talked about that. I think the timing of when everything sort of fell into place precluded us from doing that, from building it into the actual schedule of BGR. But there is a bit of downtime, and I'm not quite sure exactly when that happens, but I've been told by folks that are involved in that, that there is a bit of downtime where students could certainly take their computer login and complete the survey, but it won't be sort of built into the schedule itself.
But they could just as easily watch Netflix during that time.
That's true.
Is there anything that could be determined through this that would stop what seems to be the inexorable path of this becoming a graduation instrument? The president is very set on this. I've talked to him a number of times about it. He says, look, as soon as this coming year, as soon as the graduates of 2020 might be taking a civics exam to graduate, there's a question that I would ask, which is, why do we even need this if we know we're on the path to a civics exam at graduation?
That's a great question. I think there's a couple reasons why this is needed. One, I think it addresses some of the questions that were raised within the University Senate and across campus as well within the town hall, right? What do our students know? What would this look like if we're going to move forward with this? So my hope is that we get some evidence-based indications of where we might go in the future, right? We don't know. We might have an idea of what the endpoint is, but we don't know what that is going to look like in terms of getting from point A to point Z. Some of my colleagues, and there might be faculty and students across campus, and this was borne out by the survey that was administered by Professor Phil Van Vossen and Professor Natalie Carroll, who was the former, past university chair with respect to getting a, kind of a sense of what the campus thinks on these issues. And there's some faculty that aren't quite convinced that this is an issue, it is a problem. So that might help to shed some light in that regard. Either way, though, I think that there's much potential in terms of what we do going forward. And whether or not this particular survey finds that there is a gap or there isn't a gap, I think then it allows us to sort of leverage whatever the outcomes of that survey are to then move forward in terms of creating a proposal, and this would be my ideal, right? Creating a proposal that then addresses this concern and issue around civics literacy that I think most of us across campus agree is something that we would want students to know about, to be able to be literate and engaged. And I think that this might be one step, or at least I should say the whether it's a test, whether it's curriculum, I think it's an opportunity for us to really showcase what we can do at Purdue in ways that are meaningful to demonstrating that our students are civically literate and civically engaged.
Is that process that something you'd like the Senate to be heading up over the next academic year?
I would like to see that happen, whether that's in within one of the existing standing committees or whether that's with a special committee. I think it would be great to have folks who are experts in this area leading the charge. I think that's the ideal way to go about this. Some of the standing committees are quite tasked with other responsibilities, and so certainly their input and participation is needed, but I think we also need experts at the table that have, like, folks like Professor McCann and Van Vossen and Professor Browning, who's in communications, the Brian Lamb School of Communication, who is heading up the C-SPAN Institute. And so having folks like that at the table is going to be key in terms of moving forward with a meaningful substantive direction.
Is there still any sort of push and pull between the Senate and the president's office about who's in charge, who gets to determine what questions go on this, who gets to determine how quickly this is implemented, all of those things that have been flashpoints at times?
Can you ask the question again?
Is there a push and pull between the leadership of the Senate, mm-hmm. who steadfastly, just about every time an academic issue comes up, say, look, we are tasked with being in charge of that, let us be in charge of that, don't overstep your bounds, President Daniels. I don't know how many meetings I've been at, and you've been at, I'm sure, more than me, where that sentiment has been expressed. And the president, who is the person pushing this?
That's a great question. I think that I'm the chair of the Senate, so clearly I'm representative of that body. But I think in terms of, you know, whoever is serving as chair, each individual comes at that role with a different perspective and a different understanding of shared governance, a different understanding of the role of the University Senate vis-a-vis the administration in the president's office. And so my goal is, in terms of my leadership, is to help to facilitate the broader goals and missions of the university as shaped by not only the faculty, but in conjunction with the administration and the president and the board of trustees, and to kind of build that bridge. The University Senate is an advisory body, and different faculty, my colleagues, have different understandings of what that entails and what that means. My perspective is that the president is a member of the Senate, and he put forward this proposal. And I think I would like for us as a Senate, as a body, to move away from this, kind of antagonistic relationship that you just described, right, where it's sort of, you know, we have control of this and you have control of this and never the two shall meet, or whatever the cliche is, right? I want us to figure out ways to work together. And I think an issue like civics literacy is an important one. And I don't necessarily see it as a very controversial one, although some of my colleagues may disagree. Ultimately, whatever proposal goes forward has to be voted upon by the faculty. And certainly we want to ensure that, all the stakeholders have buy-in in whatever it is that we decide going forward, that there is a consensus, that there's a shared commitment and investment among those stakeholders and groups, whether that's faculty, students, administration, the Senate. And so navigating that, I think, is going to be really important in terms of moving forward again and how we might really, I think, capitalize on some things that are already happening on campus and address this issue at the same time.
One of the sticking points in this discussion, it seems to me anyway, is the occasional Senate member standing up and going, and figuratively pounding their fist on the table and going, "We're in charge of curriculum, full stop. No one else gets to decide that but us." And then I wondered about the fact this is happening during BGR. Classes technically haven't started yet. Does that mean that this is away from that whole idea? Well, it's clearly not part of the curriculum. There's no grade, no nothing attached to it as yet. Are you having to find ways around that recurrence of debate to try to get at that shared governance you talked about?
Wow, that's a lot smarter than I think I am, or a lot more strategic than I think I am, if people are interpreting that in that way. No, this is the BGR, the decision to do this during BGR was really born from the fact that we wanted to get incoming freshmen, because again, we wanted to avoid any conflating factors, moderating variables, just anything that might kind of, oh, well, we don't know that X and Y are connected because there's also A, B, C, and D that happen between X and Y. So we really wanted to kind of get as close as we could, a kind of blank slate understanding of where the students are at. BGR just seemed like a good time to do that because the students aren't involved in classwork. So it was more of a convenience decision than anything else. And so this is, again, not the test itself, right, that might be administered down the road as a graduation requirement, should that happen. But rather, this is just to get a baseline understanding of where we're at so we can have informed conversations going forward in the next academic year.
Are there particular areas of knowledge that the Senate or has been interested in, as you've talked to members of the body that you lead, or the president has been interested in, whether it's knowledge about local elections, which we're going to have one in the middle of this upcoming semester that students are going to be eligible to vote in, or national races, which we're going to have several of next year? Are there particular areas where people have said, I'm really concerned about gauging Purdue students' knowledge in X?
Well, from what we heard in the town hall and conversations that have happened as a result is that I think there's a kind of desire among some faculty and students, but more so faculty, I would say, that we move beyond civics literacy to thinking about civic engagement and how our students are engaging in their communities, how they're engaging politically, in terms of volunteer leadership, those sorts of things. So there's kind of other dimensions to this than just, you know, what do you know with respect to the three branches of the government, for example, or how long a senator's term is. And so my hope is that I think that this doesn't become an either or proposition, but a both and, right? And so that maybe addressing civics literacy is one step that then builds onto other things that are, one, already happening on campus, whether that's curriculum, whether that's speakers, whether that's, I know political science does, I think it was the C-SPAN Center that does watch parties. I believe political science is involved in that. So ways that we can engage the students, ways that we can get the students interested, excited about learning more about politics, their local community, politics at the national level, whatever it is that they're interested in.
Well, it seems like, you know, looking at what the citizenship test entails, for instance, and there was some talk about why that probably wouldn't be a good instrument at that town hall. But some of that is knowledge of the government. Some of it, frankly, is just American history. Are you still grappling a week out from giving this test to people with how much of it is civics, how much of it is history, how much of it is the inner workings of the political machine, how much of it is ways that you can be an involved citizen in your community that might have nothing to do with going into a ballot box?
Mm-hmm. I think the survey items themselves are going to focus centrally on political knowledge and less on the activism, or I shouldn't say activism, the engagement piece of this in terms of volunteer work and leadership and those sorts of things. And so I think that, you know, kind of trying to take small bites as we go forward, so to speak, and not bite off more than we can chew. But I think we're starting right now with this particular dimension, political knowledge, given President Daniels' proposal. But I think certainly going forward a couple of years down the line, there might be other dimensions that get added onto this or even supplementing this. Again, you know, this is all to be determined. And so I'm sort of, you know, kind of speaking into a projected future that may or may not occur. But all this is really dependent upon the campus community, what people are interested in, what they're passionate about, what we feel as the what needs to be addressed and what's the best way to go about doing that.
You accidentally, it sounded like, mentioned the word activism.
That's my field of study, so I just always go with activism.
Well, it's an interesting part of this discussion because I guarantee that you have seen on social media, like I have seen, people saying, you know, we need people going to the ballot box. We need to have higher voter participation because it's always anemic in this country, and it's much better in a lot of other countries, including some far less developed countries than the United States. And so do you have to be a little careful about the borderline between activism and civic engagement?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some people who will tell you those two things are inextricably intertwined, and there will be people who say they're two sides of the same coin. Do you have to be a little bit careful about what questions you ask, how those questions are worded, perhaps even in what order they come, so that you avoid people on maybe one side of the political spectrum or the other going, hey, you went too far, or some people saying you didn't go far enough?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I want to kind of expand it out a bit to go beyond just this particular BGR survey and talk about the kind of civics literacy proposal, broadly speaking. And I think that's going to be important. And one of the things that came out in the survey, and or this was the one that was delivered in the spring to the faculty and students, and then some of the town hall discussions and open-ended responses, we heard from a number of folks that going forward, this is, it's important to ensure that what we are indeed talking about is civics literacy or civics engagement, political knowledge in a kind of nonpartisan way. And so that this isn't about a particular political orientation or ideology, but more so this is about history, political knowledge, community engagement. I did use the term activism, but that's, I'm working on a paper right now that's about athlete activism, so I apologize. It's on the mind. But certainly, I think going forward, that's going to be a key in terms of what it is that we do, that this is about.
At the same time, though, isn't it possible that the idea for this survey is an element of the time in which we live, where you've got a larger number of people saying that we need to have civic engagement because we need to affect X change or Y change. And you've got, it seems to me, more people talking about that now than were talking about it 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And look, if 20 years ago you were unhappy with President Bush or President Clinton, that seems to be talked about in a very different way than people being unhappy with the current administration and all of the things that are going on in the country. And we're doing this interview on, you know, within 48 hours of two mass shootings. There are people who say we need to be civically engaged about that particular issue of gun control, whether it has anything to do with political parties or not. How do you write such an instrument in a time where this idea of engagement or getting one group's or another group's message out is so prevalent, and that probably affects the environment in which you write this thing?
I love this question, and I'm addicted to political podcasts, so I could go on and on and on about my own kind of personal perspective on, you know, how and why this is emerging in the politics of today. But that's a little bit, I think, beyond the scope of my role as University Senate Chair. I will say that I think what I think is the strengths of this particular team, this expert group that we put together, is that what we're drawing from are the gold standard in political science in terms of survey items and assessment of this form of political knowledge and related to civics literacy, right? And so we're drawing on the gold standard. This is a particular instrument. It's a longitudinal survey. I'm not in political science, so I apologize to my colleagues if I'm butchering this, but it's the gold standard. It's highly rigorous, reliable, and valid. And so then I think that kind of piece of, you know, that you're raising here is potentially addressed by looking at this particular instrument. It's been in the field for quite some time. And then the Woodrow Wilson survey, I think, is also we're drawing on very rigorous, reliable, and valid measures that have been used over time. And so I think there's some, I guess I'll say rigor again to those particular measures. I think certainly, though, as a public land grant institution, our mission is to educate students. And I think that from what I've heard from individuals who are invested in this particular proposal is that we want to ensure that Purdue students are educated on a number of different areas, and not just in their own particular major, but that they have a kind of more holistic education that incorporates things like civics literacy. And so we want to have, and I think as just a citizen of the United States, you know, somebody or even, you know, a resident of the United States, whatever your status is, that you want to see whoever's in the voting booth be informed about who and what they're voting for, and who and what people we're electing to those positions, and what are the policies, and to really be informed when we go into the voting booth, or be really informed when we go out.
Are you hoping if you don't call it a test, more students will take it?
That is my hope. No, I actually, it's not a test, because when you say a test, it's they're getting graded. There's some sort of evaluation and assessment. There's no grade involved. This is zero stakes. If you get all of them wrong, you know, no big deal. If you get all of them right, no big deal. You're not going to get to graduate early.
Well, but there are stakes, though. The stakes are, do you have to take a test 4 years from now to get out of school? Aren't there some stakes in this?
Well, so I think that's a good way of thinking about it. But this particular baseline assessment, the stakes are not determining whether or not they're graduating. They're determining what we might do going forward.
But if you find that 100% of students know 100% of things about civics, then someone could come back and say, well, clearly we don't need that end of course exam, you know, right?
That could potentially be an argument that someone could make, but I don't think that necessarily the results of the survey would then preclude us from doing other kinds of initiatives, curriculum development, establishing a certificate, establishing a badge. I'm not really quite familiar with this badge program, but I think students can earn badges in different ways. Students can take certificates to supplement or correspond with their major. So if all of our students come back and say this, I think that's a great, or if all of our students come back and they know X, Y, and Z about our political system or our history, then that's great. And I think that means that we build on that and capitalize on that in different ways.
Are you imagining that this BGR test assessment, whatever you want to call it, is going to become a yearly thing?
That's a great question. There has been some conversation. I know there's some faculty that are really interested in what might be some knowledge generation that might come out of this. So writing up particular studies or research papers that might help to advance conversations within the fields of political science and education. So certainly this might be something that we revisit going forward if there were to be a kind of research assessment. Or if there's a need within the University Senate or the other stakeholders that might be involved in these conversations to reassess, we might actually want to think about surveying those students again, the ones that are coming in 2019, surveying them in 2 years and looking at differences and changes over time. You know, you get a couple of researchers in a room and start talking about knowledge creation and generation, and the conversation gets quite lively, and it's like, we can do this and we can do that. And I'm really excited about that potential as well. So I think there are ways that this can really be a win-win-win for on a number of different fronts.
Well, in parallel question to that, if the university eventually gets to a point where you have the graduation requirement of this exam, do you think that that needs to be a living document where you ask things differently? And could that be informed by, you see one thing for the students who come in the fall of 2019, who are going to be leaving in the spring of 2024, I guess, or 2023, and so you have a sense of what they knew when they came in, and maybe therefore you have a sense of how you need to cater to that particular cohort of mm-hmm. students and test their aptitude 4 years later. Is that, maybe I'm thinking way too far in the future.
Yes, you are. No, but I think you're raising a really good point, which is, you know, as time goes on and different things happen within the K-12 space, right, there might be different curriculum changes, things that happen on that level. There might be things that happen within the wider society itself that we might also need to address. Generational differences, so how engaged are students with respect to, I want to say newspaper, but you all know what I mean, right? So are we reading and consuming news? And if so, like, what are those sources and how knowledgeable are we? Where are we accessing information? Like, that will change over time as well. And we've seen that in the last 5 years. This is not my area of expertise, but I think I'm safe to say, or I think it's safe to say that, you know, how students are consuming information, how they're gaining information outside of the classroom is much different in 2019 than it was 5 years ago in 2014 even. And so I think, you know, the technology, education and curriculum, you know, the political landscape, our culture, all of that's going to kind of shape, you know, how what students know and So I think, yes, I think that's a really good point that you're raising to keep to make sure that this is a kind of a living, whatever it is that we're doing, that it's a living entity that then can shift and change as our students shift and change.
Well, and you've brought up an interesting point, too, which is if you start to develop longitudinal data about what students at Purdue know when they come in as freshmen and when they exit as seniors, that's going to reflect what they've learned coming in their first 12 or 13 years of education before they get here. And so we've been thinking about this a lot as what do students know to get them prepared for being in the world? But isn't it also possible that you're going to have information that says K through 12 in Indiana, you are doing X right, but on this Y subject, you need to pay a little more attention to that?
Certainly. And I think my colleagues in the College of Education might find some real interest in some of that data as well. And that could potentially help to inform curriculum at that on that side of the kind of educational trajectory, certainly.